Here we are again.
I'm going to grab me a tasty beverage as well.
There's a whole bunch of them right out there. So as he's getting his tasty beverage, we're going to welcome you to episode 97. Three away from the big 100. Which, I came over a little early tonight, so we should be done a little early, so maybe we'll talk about episode 100 and what we're going to do for it. It is August 20th, and tonight we're going to do a Fresh Eyes double feature. The Fresh Eyes, we started two episodes ago with the Evil Dead trilogy.
Yeah.
Which turned out to be so much fun. I had a really good time talking about those movies. I don't think you can go wrong. I mean,
it's a great canon.
It's so good, and like we said before, it's like it's pretty much everything you want. Like, it's either hard dark horror or campy comedy and everything in between throughout the entire series. So much fun. But had an opportunity to watch a couple more movies, and so we're going to do a Fresh Eyes double feature. What are we going to talk about tonight, Mr. Scott?
We're going to talk about a couple of movies. One, first one being The Lost Boys, very classic vampire film. And second being an even bigger classic, The Thing.
So we're going to get right into that here shortly.
Both movies hold up very well over time, too.
Yes, and we'll touch on it after the breaks, but you know, one of the things about Fresh Eyes, the whole point of Fresh Eyes was, these are supposed to be movies that you've seen 100 times. You anticipate scenes. Maybe they have quote-alongs. You know, when somebody starts talking about something relating to one of these movies, you know what they're talking about.
Yeah.
But so often you get, I don't want to say jaded, you just get away from it. So you've seen it so often that you remember this scene or that scene, but when's the last time you actually sat down, press play, watch the little studio logo come up, or the FBI warning if you're on VHS, and actually watch it beginning to end with no breaks. And, I see you got that one playing in the background.
Yeah, threw on Lost Boys in the background for us to check out.
So, we're going to...
Really strange.
We'll get into that right after...
First, the old business!
All right. On this date in 1775, and it's been a while since I probably explained old business, new business. Maybe it's been a while since we just sat down, because if you're following us, you kind of know what these things are, but every now and then we have to reintroduce. If you're a new listener, you've never heard the Scary Dad podcast before, and this is your first episode, we basically have three segments. We have old business. Old business is this date in history, preferably something horrific that happened on this date in history, but sometimes it's just interesting curiosities. You know, this day the sun rose, the sun set, and you went through your day and you did things, but at some point in history something impactful happened. Then we take a break, and afterwards we do new business, and that's what happened pretty much in the last couple of days.
Yeah, you know, just different stories, some horror related, some just goofy
movie news, all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Like that. And then we get into the heart of the show, which today will be our double feature, The Thing and The Lost Boys. So, without further ado, the old business. This date in 1775, the Spanish establish a presidio, which is a fortress. It's a fortress surrounding a mission. So it's basically a church fortress.
Uh-huh.
In what would eventually become Tucson, Arizona. So, basically, what would become Tucson is founded on this date in 1775. On this date in 1852, the steamboat Atlantic sinks in Lake Erie. There's more than 150 people killed.
Wow.
In controversial news, on this date in 1858, Charles Darwin publishes his theory of evolution by natural selection.
Which we've kind of tried to divert natural selection as of late.
Yeah.
And you see what it's done to society.
Nature has a plan, guys. Is in new business, did you point out that California banned straws?
No, but we could talk about it when we get to it.
I think of my dear old dad, who was probably, you know, he's kind of a closet hippie, if all things are... But he passed away in 2014, and I just can't imagine that if he woke up today and be like, what's been going on? It's like, well, in California, you can smoke weed right in front of a cop, but you can't drink your Coke out of a straw.
And the thing about it is, the thing about it is, the video that spurned the whole thing of the sea turtle with the straw being pulled out of his nose is heart-wrenching. I mean, it's effective. But I don't see where this ban is going to help in any way, shape, or form.
No. Especially since all the plastic in the oceans coming out of the Asiatic countries, India, right. China, Indonesia. But, you know, we're not into politics. It just is what it is. But isn't it weird that... When I was in Seattle a couple weeks ago, there were signs on the street saying to find an ashtray or else you will be punished by arrest and or $250 fine for throwing your cigarette butt on the ground. And yet the entire atmosphere smells like pot. Everybody's smoking weed in public in this city. Like, how things have changed. Like, it's... Now, to be fair, the joints don't come with filters, but still, it's just that whole. And I'm pro legalization. I'm not even saying. I'm just saying, like, dude, how things have changed.
Right.
What would you tell somebody who died 10 years ago? How things have changed. Well, you can smoke weed in California, but you
better not use a straw.
But you can't use a straw to sip your big gulp while you're. On this date in 1866, President Andrew Johnson declares the end of the Civil War. You have to imagine that was a pretty big announcement.
Oh yeah, it took a while for news to spread to certain areas, but...
Well, of course.
We didn't have Facebook Live at that time.
A whole bunch of idiots with Twitter, like, hashtag no way. Hashtag South will rise. Hashtag carpetbaggers.
Don't tread on me.
All right, in high body counts, in 1910, the Great Fire of 1910, which was a good, clever name, in Northeast Washington and Northern Idaho, 3 million acres burnt.
Wow.
That is a lot of land scorched. Yeah. In this date in 1920, the first commercial radio station went live. It's called 8MK in Detroit.
It's pretty big.
Mm-hmm. Almost 100 years ago. 98 years ago. And more boat sinkings. In 1989, so you think all these big boat sinks, people died, that's happened like back when things were black and white. This was 1989. A pleasure boat sinks on the River Thames, and 51 people are killed. And one of those... Okay, I shouldn't laugh, because the in our political climate, people say that Texas should secede, or the South should secede again, or just, you know, whatever. In 1998, the Supreme Court of Canada rules that Quebec cannot secede without approval from the federal government.
We don't want you to do that.
Well, that's like being like 18 years old and be like, Mom, Dad, I want to move out. And they're like, yeah. No.
Yeah. You're like, you're not ready yet.
But I think I want to. Nope. There he is.
Sexy sex, man.
Legally, that's not his name. You.
Well, at least he can't write it. He can't sign it.
Yeah. But yeah, Supreme Court says nope. You can't secede from our country without our permission. Like, well, I mean, it's a landmass.
The whole reason we're seceding.
Yeah, like, we don't want to hang out with you anymore.
It's like a bad boyfriend.
That old, in Seinfeld where George tried to break up with his girlfriend. He's like, yeah, I think I want to break up. And she's like, no. And just kept going about her afternoon. And he's just like, please. Anyway. All right. Notable births on this date in 1890. Mr. H.P. Lovecraft was born. Controversial fellow, that.
Yes, but very influential at the same time.
Absolutely influential. Another controversial fellow, 1931, Mr. Don King. He's like, I don't give a shit about your concussion. Give me my pay-per-view. 1935, Mr. Ron Paul, Libertarian candidate.
Yep. He's from Texas.
From Texas here. 1942, Mr. Chef Isaac Hayes.
Smooth man there.
And in 1966, Cowboys from Hell, Mr. Dimebag Darrell.
Yep, R.I.P. Let's drink one to him.
Let's. Happy birthday, Dime. All right, in 2012, notable deaths, we lost Miss Phyllis Diller. I'm sure Phyllis Diller was a thing at some point. I only ever remember from her guesting on Scooby-Doo.
Game shows.
She was a guest host on Scooby-Doo. She's one of those self-depreciating comics that I didn't, you know, of course, she's on Scooby-Doo, which is a kid's show that came out in the mid-late 70s. I was a little kid in the mid-late 70s having no idea who she was. It's like, special guest, Phyllis Diller. You got this, like, white-haired chick being, you know, smoking a cigarette, being like, it's like, you know, men never call me. Let's go solve a crime. And you're like,
think about what you just said. Smoking a cigarette on a kid's cartoon.
Oh, yeah.
You'd never have that shit today, dude.
Have you seen the old Fred and Barney commercials for Winston?
No, I haven't.
Didn't you know the Flintstones was originally a Winston, it was.
Really?
Yeah. They were ads for Winston cigarettes.
We're so lucky that people protect us from ourselves.
I know. And in 2017, we lost Jerry Lewis. Hey, lady!
Jerry Lewis was funny, man. He was good.
And that is it for old business.
Alrighty.
So let's take a break, and in honor of the Lost Boys, I think we might just have to hear a song from the uncopyrighted Sexy Sax Man. This is Mr. Tim Capello.
Still believe. beat. Feel like I wanna go home. What do I feel? What do I know? But I still believe. Yes, I still believe. Through the shame, through the grief, through the heartache, through the tears, through the way, through the years. For people like us, in places like this,
you enjoyed that little musical interlude. Alrighty, now it's time that we got a lot to catch up on, so it's time to get into a little bit of
new business is new business, and this is new business.
Okay, so to start off with, I'll run through them pretty quick. As you know, Jordan Peele was awarded the opportunity to direct a new Twilight Zone series for CBS. It will be going into production later this year. They're set up in the writer's room. They have the first season of concepts, outlines, and scripts. And they have various stages of different episodes. It's going to be 10 episodes in the first season. And they're going to start production within the next couple of months. So it ought to be interesting to see. Hopefully Jordan Peele can get some good stories to use for... To give it its due justice. As you know, Twilight Zone is actually a total classic. From the radio series to the television series, Twilight Zone was just amazing and way ahead of itself. Next! Okay, have you heard that Robert Englund, the original Freddy Krueger, has a fantastic idea for a Nightmare on Elm Street reboot? Have you heard about this?
Mm-mm.
Okay. It does sound pretty interesting. He was at the Summer Television Critics Association press tour for Eli Roth's upcoming AMC docuseries, The History of Horror, which ought to be interesting to see. And he gave an idea for Nightmare on Elm Street reboot. And what he said was, if I had an Eli Roth budget, I would have cast different actors to play Freddy for every potential victim, so that Freddy showed up to each victim as their specific fear, since he fed off of the person's individual fears.
Kind of like It does.
Right. Because he is only alive in the imagination of his future victim, they would talk about it at a slumber party or a locker room, school bus going home. All we know about this Fred Krueger is he wears a hat and he wears a striped sweater and has a clawed hand. But then each iteration would be different for each person. It could be an old tattered baseball cap for another Freddy. He could be tall, he could be short, he could be overweight, he could be muscular. Every one of the victims would have a different Freddy they imagine. And then at the end, it would be the ultimate victim, and we see Freddy peel his face open, and maybe it's Robert Englund pops up. It's Freddy Krueger, and it's the essence of Freddy. That would be pretty cool.
That would be cool.
So that was an interesting pitch that he threw out there. I think that would be really, really neat to see. All right. Let's talk sex robots.
Let's talk sex robots.
As you know, technology has gotten very advanced with sex robots. There was a recent article. This guy, I can't remember his name. He goes by an alias that has something to do with the fact that he currently owns four of the high end model sex dolls. Apparently, he has spent $100,000 on sex dolls so far, and he's currently test driving the next step in technology for the company that makes them. And it's supposed to be like he's ranting and raving about how incredible this is. Well, in Japan, they're very popular. It is predicted that the Japanese people will be extinct by the year 3546 because of the popularity of these sex dolls. Now, they're saying they're going to be extinct in 1600 years. we're probably all going to be extinct in 1600 years by a meteor or something that's going to be popping up. But it's interesting the way they're looking at this, because the birth rate in Japan has been dropping incredibly. As of April 1st, 2018, they're down 170,000 people in population from the previous year. Birth rates are declining very, very quickly, and people are blaming a lot of it on the popularity of sex dolls. And of course, in Japan, there's a high drive to work. People work an average of 80 hours a week. They don't have time for copulation. They don't have time for dating. So they're just going to these sex dolls instead, and they aren't procreating at a rate fast enough to populate the country.
Wow.
From 2016 to 2017, the number of children in population decreased by 17.1%, dude. It's pretty significant.
I don't know. 3,000 is a pretty long projection. If you're dropping 20% a year, that's an accelerated decline.
So we'll see what happens with Japan. Okay, you know who Michael Phelps is?
Yes.
He smokes pot, and he happens to be the most decorated Olympian in history. Well,
is he in trouble again?
No. Michael Phelps was young. He had some records that he broke in competition in California. One in particular was the 100-meter butterfly in the Far West International Championship in California. His record was recently broken by a 10-year-old swimming phenom whose name is, you ready for this? This is why I'm talking about it, because it's cool as hell. His name is Clark Kent Apuda.
Nice.
Young Clark Kent won the 100-meter butterfly in 1 minute 9 seconds. Phelps set the record in 1995, and this kid has come up, and his long-standing record has been broken now.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool to see, man. Hopefully that he'll be able to do something with his talent. He's only been swimming for 3 years, his dad said, but he's a natural at it, apparently. Okay.
My daughter's in the swim team, and like, so they have this charity thing. I guess it is a charity thing. It's like a donation thing. So you go around, knock on doors. It's kind of one of those 5K things. It's like, oh, if I can walk a mile, you can give me a dollar a mile or whatever. So it's for laps. And like the average is 20 laps. When you say a lap, it's one across and one back. So that's 2 laps. So go across the pool, come back, that's 1. Or that's 2.
It's 2.
And so, you know, you make it across, you know, there and back 10 times, it's 20 laps. My daughter is a good swimmer, but she's very social. So she'll swim, and she comes and she gets about halfway across the pool, and she'll roll over on her back and kind of do a half-ass backstroke and wave at everybody, you know, and turn around and kind of dog paddle for a minute and then go back to, man, there's these kids that'll just sit there and just like underwater, they got their goggles, they'll sit there and just like Aquaman it, just like boom, take a breath, boom, right. Take it's like, baby, you're not, I mean,
keep trying, sweetheart.
No, I mean, you have all the fun you want, but you're not competing. Competition's not in her in her toolbox. But
okay, so this October marks the 40th anniversary of Halloween, which coincides with the release of the remake, the current iteration, directed by Danny McBride. That's going to be coming out also. That's going to be released October 19th. Right now, they're in the works to have a convention called H40, 40 Years of Terror Convention, to take place in California before the movie's released. At this convention, they want to reunite the original cast and crew from the original Halloween. But they're having trouble locating Sandy Johnson, who played Judy Myers in the original 1978 film. So there's a hunt right now. They'd love to bring Sandy to meet her many fans for the convention, but we haven't had any luck locating her. Any other fans can help us find her. She is positively identified. We'd be happy to offer them a pair of complimentary tickets to the event. So if anybody knows where she is out there,
find her.
Call John Carpenter and say, "Hey, dude, I found her. Give me my tickets." So just so you know that. Okay, this is a funny one, dude. A zoo in India. Oh, sorry, Egypt. I'll dodge for that. They're insisting they did not paint a pair of donkeys to look like zebras. Cairo's International Garden Municipal Park has become the target of ridicule after a student I can't pronounce his name, posted images on Facebook of the suspicious beast. He said the zoo's two zebras were obviously painted donkeys, which happens in Mexico a lot, but I didn't know it happened in Egypt as well. And what's funny is, look at the picture. It is obviously a painted animal, and it is not a zebra.
Wow.
But this zoo is actually strutting these two donkeys around as though they're zebras. How awesome is that, dude? Okay. This guy has come up with... When I first saw this article, I was like, I got to go to Kroger and see if I can find these. And then I realized it was actually just a joke. These guys came together and they came up with different Ben and Jerry's flavors based on horror movies, which is just awesome. There's, look at these with me while I read them. There's a Never Sleep Again coffee flavored caffeinated ice cream with Freddy Krueger. There is The Good Guys by Ben and Jerry's featuring Chucky. There is the Ben & Jerry's Patrick Bateman, which is mint ice cream with Godiva chocolate chunks and blood red cherry swirl. There is the Cherry Dandruff, Dandruff chocolate bars based on Fright Night. There is the Human Centipede, based on the movie The Human Centipede. You got to look these up, y'all. The actual artwork is hilarious. There is also the All Out of Bubblegum, bubblegum ice cream based on They Live. There is the Here's Brownie, based on the Jack Nicholson character. There is the Strawberry Cornetto Crunch, based on, what was the name of this movie again? I can't remember it. Nah, never mind. We'll move on to the next one. This is all the best parts. Red Velvet ice cream with chocolate body parts. I think that's American Horror Story, I think. There's the Camp Crystal Cake, which is cake batter ice cream with cherries and almonds based off of Jason. There's the Horace Pinker Shocky Road based off the movie Shocker. There is the Nam Berry Flashback based off of Chop Top from Texas Chainsaw Massacre Part 2. These are so awesome, dude. The Midnight Snack, vanilla ice cream with a wicked surprise based off of Gremlins. And the Sherbet West based off of Reanimator.
Sleepaway Surprise. Banana flavored.
The S'more Brains based off with 2-4-5 Trioxin based off of Return of the Living Dead. I think that's Jennifer's Body, ain't it?
That's from Death Proof.
Yes, they're Death. Yeah. Cherry Darling, based off of.
And the stuff.
The stuff.
Actually, on I follow this guy on Instagram. He makes this really cool art stuff. He had one of the stuff. It's like a carton, like a
yeah.
And I was like, the next morning I was gonna go on vacation. I was like, hey, how much is that? He's like, oh, it's like $15. I was like, oh, I'll have to catch you the next time because I got to get my crap together and I can't order something that'll be delivered. But, yeah, the stuff was good. This is a good movie.
Okay. This is the last one I'll talk about. Then we'll move on. A researcher is under fire for showing risque photos at a turtle and fish conference. You wouldn't imagine a turtle and fish conference without... I looked for the photos. I couldn't find them. I tried to find them. But this man, he was accepting the award for Distinguished Herpetologist at this convention, and he went ahead and for his turtle research. And he went ahead and he had a slideshow set up to the point where he had submitted the slideshow to the convention so that they could run it on their projector and everything. They felt as though it was too risque, because what it was is all his research assistants were with him. And they were apparently scantily clad women in bikinis. And they actually, as they're holding the turtles and everything that they're tagging and collecting and stuff, the convention actually black boxed parts of the women's bodies. So when they showed it up on the screen, it looked really, really bad, apparently. But they revoked the guy's award stuff because the controversies are... You're only going to expect the kind of controversy at a herpetologist.
Yeah, like, right? Hey, we like snakes and lizards.
The Me Too movement has apparently... apparently moved on into the herpetology field. But I'm still trying to find the actual pictures to see how bad they are, but apparently I haven't had any luck as of yet.
That's awesome.
And that's enough.
That's it for old business or for new business?
Yes.
All right. Let's take a break and we will be right back.
Mayday. Mayday. Send the beauty. This is U.S. Station 31. You read me? Found something in the ice. We need some help down here. Can anybody hear me? We found something. We found something. We found something.
Men have just discovered something. For 100,000 years, it was buried in the snow and ice. Now it has found a place to live. Inside. Where no one can see it. Or hear it. Or feel it.
I know I'm human. Some of you are still human. This thing doesn't want to show itself. It wants to hide inside an imitation. It'll fight if it has to. But it's vulnerable out in the open. If it takes us over... Then it has no more enemies. Nobody left to kill it. And then it's won.
You guys gonna listen to Gary? We can beat one of those things!
Yes, we are.
So you said you wanted to start with the Lost Boys.
Whichever one you want to start with.
Well, at the beginning you said we'll start with Lost Boys. I don't think it really matters. I didn't have a whole terrible lot to talk about the thing other than being a gushing fanboy.
Okay.
We'll get into more detail, but I think the Lost Boys is going to be a little bit longer as far as observations and stuff. Plus, we've both seen it. It's on right now.
Yeah.
So,
like I told you earlier, the thing I was going to discuss with the Lost Boys, and I'm embarrassed to say that I just had this revelation with this fresh watch.
Well, wait for just a second.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I want to introduce the Lost Boys,
okay,
and the reason why we're kind of... No, well, not the Lost Boys itself. I just want to... So the reason I'm on a Lost Boys kick is our good friend Johnny Stitches from Sirenicide. Now, this is a sadistic human being. Like... He runs some kind of weird cadre of underground medical weirdness that, like, they steal cadavers for organs, and there's all kinds of crazy...
Well, they jack people
organs
and then sew them back and replace them with new ones and then sew them back up.
I'm telling you. But when he's not doing that, he's listening to good music. And he turned me on to this band called Gunship, which is kind of... Their technical term is synthwave, but basically they're kind of a throwback 80s synth-based band, and they had a video, and the video is entitled Dark All Day, and the song is called Dark All Day, and the video's an anime, and it's takes place in Santa Carla from The Lost Boys, and... Without giving anything away, when you watch this video, it makes you want to watch The Lost Boys. And so he posted it. I listened to watched the video, was immediately taken by the band, bought everything that I could buy that was available from the band. And the band I can't recommend highly enough. Everything that they do is like every segment of every song is a complete earworm. It'll stick in your head for days. And it's awesome. But given that kind of, like, boost. Like, oh man, I really need to watch Lost Boys. I thought I owned it. Somehow, I used to. Maybe somebody borrowed the movie and I never got it back. So I went and bought it and I had a chance to watch it again. And so this is a fresh eyes. Scott and I both have recently rewatched Lost Boys, and we're actually watching it again right now. It's one of those movies from, it was released in 1987.
Yeah.
So if you're our age, you know, that was a pretty serious movie for the time.
Yeah.
Like, everybody's seen The Lost Boys.
The soundtrack was everywhere. It was just it was a killer movie, man.
So we're going to talk about it fresh eyes-wise and just kind of go over some impressions of having watched this thing that's been part of our lifeblood for the longest time and then just watching it anew. What did you notice that was different? You said you were going to be bothered. I was like, it's going to bother me, but what did you notice?
Well, first I want to, you know, I consider myself a horror fan. I've seen The Lost Boys over a dozen times. I've watched it many, many times. Love the movie every time I see it. And I think part of the reason I just had this revelation with this last watching is, this is another embarrassing thing I'm going to say, but we haven't met in almost a month. I just got through, because of Amy, I just got through binge watching 6 seasons of Once Upon a Time. Have you ever watched that show?
I watched a couple episodes of the very early 8.
Okay. I just watched 6 seasons of it, and I think that's why I finally made this revelation. The number of Peter Pan references in Lost Boys is, I love it, because I like the idea of the dark Peter Pan, because Peter Pan was kind of a dick.
Mm-hmm.
And he should be a dark character, and this movie just uses that so well in it. Just and I'm thinking to myself, okay, it was Peter Pan and the Lost Boys. The name of the movie is The Lost Boys. How did I never realize the connection between those two things? I mean, David is Peter Pan.
Yes.
It's exactly what he is. He's Peter Pan. He's bringing these kids. They'll never grow old. They'll never die. It's a dark Peter Pan. And I love that, dude. I mean, that just, when that light went off, it made my experience with this movie so much more.
See, I always kind of knew, like, I never didn't get the references, you know, just being a fan of Peter Pan. And but no, you're right. There were quite a few more actual references, just little things that happened that like.
Well, when they're celebrating in the cave, it's like the Lost Boys dancing around the campfire.
Uh huh.
It's exactly what it is.
The Lost Boys can fly.
Yeah.
Peter and
the Lost Boys. He comes up to his window.
Yes. yeah. All the Peter Pan references. And even in Peter Pan, one of the older boy was named Michael.
Yeah.
And it was Wendy, Jonathan, and Michael. And
but yeah, that was a new thing that I realized with this last watch.
They were searching for a mother.
Yeah.
they wanted Wendy to come and be their mother.
But I'm sure most of you have already gotten that. I'm sorry I'm late to the party on that one. But like I said, once it clicked, I already loved the movie. I love it even more now.
That's one of those, like I say, you know, like at the time it came out, of course, the Coreys, the Corey Haim, Corey Feldman. Corey Feldman was coming off the success of Goonies. Corey Haim was a teenage heartthrob in his own right. And so for me, watching with fresh eyes is whenever I first originally watched it, I think. So if it came out in 87, then that would have made me 11 years old. I'm pretty sure I didn't see it in theaters, but HBO and video was all over the place. So I saw it whenever I was probably at least 12, when I saw The Lost Boys for the first time. And the funny thing is, I always identified with Corey Haim, Sam's character, because he's the younger brother.
Yeah.
Michael's the older brother. He's involved in all kinds of bad crap. So I kind of... But what I noticed watching this again was how much... I don't want to keep saying Corey Haim. Sam. So, real quick. You've got multiple characters. You've got Sam and Michael move to Santa Carla, California with their mother to live with their grandfather because she's just recently divorced. Michael is the older brother. He falls in with a motorcycle gang that is led by Kiefer Sutherland. And they're into all kinds of bad stuff. Like, they keep getting kicked off the boardwalk. They're just teenage ruffians. They're miscreants. And they're ruffians, and nobody wants them around. But Michael is taken by this girl who is involved with the group, and he falls in with the group. And Sam, he's still a little kid, and he meets these two characters who the Frog Brothers, who run a comic book store, and they also are vampire hunters. So that kind of sets the stage for where we're at. The weird thing is, and I wrote this down when I was watching the movie, Corey Haim, when the movie was made, was 16 years old. Jason Patrick, who plays Michael, was 21. And Kiefer Sutherland was 21. Jamie Gertz, who plays Star, the girl, was 22. So young, but not teenagers.
Right.
But Michael, Kiefer, Michael, David, and Star are all supposed to be teenagers, and Sam's supposed to be a little boy. It never occurred to me before, because I was always following Sam's story. Corey Haim sticks out like a sore thumb this whole movie. He doesn't quite belong.
He doesn't fit in. He stands out in the background of everybody else in the place. He's totally different than everybody else.
Right.
And the thing about what's funny is, he's totally different than everybody else, but not everybody else is the same. He is that far away being his own individual person that there's no group out of all the groups on the boardwalk that he fits into.
He's also 16 playing 9.
Yeah.
And Jason Patrick's 21 playing 16. Kiefer Sutherland's 21 playing 16. And Star is 22 playing 16, 17. Jamie Gertz, sorry. But even, like, Sam never even kind of fits in. He still dresses the same. He still does his own thing. Michael gets a leather jacket. He gets his ear pierced. He rides the motorcycle. He does the things that he needs to do to kind of fit in with the in crowd, whereas Sam does not. But he really kind of sticks out like a sore thumb through the movie. And, like, it never bothered me before, but watching Corey Haim, and it's not that he acted it badly, he acted it right. But again, he's 16 playing like a 9.
A kid, yeah. Well, let me ask you this.
But he's got a Reform School Girls poster
on the wall.
That was a legendary movie.
And that disturbing poster of Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. You mentioned that David fell in to the bad crowd. Do you think he fell in, or they sought him out? Because I think they sought him out. They used Star to get him. They wanted him in their group.
Oh, I agree.
So they used Star. Once they saw that he had a thing for Star, they said, okay, we're going to use her to get him here. And they picked him. Now, whether or not they picked him because of orders from their dad, quote unquote, or they just them themselves decided they wanted him as a lost boy, that's yet to be determined. But
well, it's revealed at the end.
Yeah, because he wanted the family.
They were ordered to go get Sam and David in.
Yeah,
or Sam and Michael in. The thing is, watching the movie, you're watching a vampire movie, and it's like, for me, Sam was always the hero, but the reality is Michael's the hero.
Yeah,
it's Michael's story.
He's
the main character, and Sam's kind of the bratty little brother. He ends up coming through in the end and saving things, but Michael does not want this.
Right, he doesn't ask for it. He doesn't want it.
He got tricked into drinking the blood,
and the way they tricked him into it was awesome. Fuck with his head to make it put him on the defensive.
Yes.
He's like, you're not going to trick me again. This isn't blood.
Yeah.
You know, they worked it perfectly.
But all he's after is Star. That's all he cares about.
is impressing her.
And he doesn't realize who she is either. So, right. Which her name is another Peter Pan reference.
Yeah.
So, if you seek out the star, then you can live forever. But, yeah, little things that that I didn't notice before. It's also, in my memory, it seemed as if the movie happened over the course of a summer. But in reality, it only happens over 3 days.
Yeah, yeah.
When they first arrive, when they first go to the boardwalk and see Sexy Sex Man, and he sees Star, and then she rides off with David. So the very next night, he's buying the leather jacket.
And she shows up again.
And she shows up after him. She's like, "Hey."
Well, he's looking to get his ear pierced, and she's like, "Hey, I could do that for you."
Yeah, and then she, he rides, and that very night, he's in the cave with the Lost Boys.
Yeah.
That very night, he drinks the blood and becomes a vampire.
He goes to the railroad tracks. It's all the same night.
But whenever Sam is talking to the Frog Brothers about how he's vamping out, they're like, does he have bad breath? Does he sleep all day? Does he, you know, is he sensitive to light? And he's like, all of the things you just said. But he says it like, yeah, he has been sleeping late. Yeah, he has been staying out all night.
He's been doing it forever.
Yeah, it's like he's been doing it for a while. But even the other characters, like the mom, she's like, I'm going out with Max on Thursday.
We're going to dinner tomorrow night, and that's when shit goes down.
Yeah, so it's just like, the timeline seems longer.
But it's less than a week.
Yeah. It's one of those things, this movie is just, for its flaws, which, I mean, there's a few. There's a couple of things you can tell there are cut scenes, like certain things that they say. It's like whenever they got Grandpa's car after they go to the bluff and down in the cave and they kill Marco.
Uh-huh.
And then they run up and they get in the car and he's like, floor it! And he's like, floor it does not mean warp speed. He's like, that doesn't make any sense at all whatsoever in any context of anything. You hit the gas and put the car in reverse to the cliff. There's no Star Trek reference here. Like, that doesn't, like, it doesn't make, it just doesn't fly.
The other thing that when you're talking about when you first introduced to Santa Carla, immediately before anything happens, you realize it's a really, really bad place. There's missing person posters everywhere.
Yeah.
All over the boardwalk, in the comic book shop, like you just showed on the milk cart, everywhere there's missing. They drive in and the sign says Murder Capital of the World.
And yet she just lets her kids run all over the place.
Yeah. And there's, like I said, there's missing people. In the comic book shop, there's missing person posters in the comic book shop.
Yeah.
It's unreal, man. It's just, it's obviously a really, really bad place and something is going on. And the only ones that know what's going on are the Frog Brothers and Grandpa. Let me ask you this with fresh eyes. Did you feel as though they gave away the fact that he was the lead vampire before he came out and said he was the lead vampire?
They said he was the lead vampire, but then he survived the test.
Right, he survived the test. That's what I'm saying. Did you fall for that? Did you think that he was okay?
Originally, I did. Okay. I think the first time I saw it, I did.
Yeah.
You think David is just the man. And funny, because I made my wife watch this, and she was asking me what I thought my favorite part was. Like, not my favorite part, but I was like, you know, Kiefer Sutherland, David is a badass.
Oh yeah.
I mean,
he's Peter Pan.
He is a remarkably charismatic person, and he's just really good at being a jerk.
Yeah.
You know? But he's also somebody who you want to hang out with, you know? So I thought he was one of the best parts of the movie. She's like, he's one of the worst parts of the movie.
He's got a mullet.
Well, he's got his mullet. He's like, kind of just, he laughs at things. He's just kind of, I was like, that's what makes him cool. is because he's so disconnected from things. Like, mm-hmm. you're like, okay, well, if what I'm doing isn't impressing you, then what do I need to do to impress you? He's like, hang off this bridge.
Right.
It's like, that's intense right there. Because at the time, Michael didn't have any idea that he was gonna survive.
Right.
Like, that's suicide gulch right there. He thought he was gonna die. But he went, he followed him down there.
And let me ask you this, when the final battle, which one of the kills was your favorite?
I will say that that's one criticism, is that the final battle went down pretty too easy on the side of the good guys.
Yeah, it did.
I always remember it being just a little bit more scary of like, oh man, they're coming for us. But it's just like, one, two, three.
And none of the good guys died or got hurt or anything.
Nobody got hurt. And, you know, at the beginning of the movie, whenever the security guard's trying to, like, get into his car...
They rip the door off. Well, when they get the comic book thief, they rip the hood of his car off.
Yeah. And so they're powerful. They are strong. And maybe they're a little overconfident. But even, like... they hit him with garlic, and he's like, garlic doesn't work. And I don't know, it's just one of those, like, it seemed like it went down too easy. Like, the way they died was hard, but killing them was easy.
Right.
So, the best one is the bathtub.
High five. My opinion. Because just when the blood starts coming up through the drains and everything, it's an intense scene, dude.
I mean, that's straight up Gremlins, too.
Yeah.
Because he goes down, he comes up, he's melting, he comes down, he comes up again, he's a skull.
It's a great so scene, great. Man.
Death by Stereo, that's another one. If you're 9 years old, or even 16, if you've got a minion of the undead that you just shot with a bow and arrow and he exploded in your living room, you're not going to be all like, whoa, that's awesome, bro.
He explodes, big time. Body parts everywhere. And, you know, and you were saying how easy it was. Look how easy they killed the main vampire. Grandpa backs up with his car, and he's gone.
But the way Grandpa makes it seem is like, that's just one of many.
Yeah.
It's just another one. So he doesn't seem like he's too nonplussed about it. He's just like, well, my house is wrecked, but too many damn vampires around here. Ultimately, I've probably seen this movie 20 times.
I've seen it a lot, yeah.
In my life, I've seen this movie at least 20 times. Love this movie.
It's one of my favorite vampire movies. This is my top three for sure.
As far as vampire movies go, it's certainly. And I recommend it to anybody. It was awesome because my buddy Dennis, that I used to be in the band with, I changed my avatar on Facebook to David. He's got his chopsticks, he's eating his noodles.
Mm-hmm.
And Dennis texts me, he's like, man, now I'm watching Lost Boys. Ultimately, Lost Boys is one of the classic 80s vampire movies, classic 80s movie. Director Joel Schumacher went on to ruin the Batman franchise, so you know, let's leave him with the Lost Boys. And
look at the scene right here with the shirt that Sam's wearing compared to his brother. It's like light and dark magic, like once upon a time, dude.
Like I said, I think he's supposed to be like 9.
Okay.
I think that he's supposed to be a little kid. Because even so, like I said, Jason Patrick, he's 22. And his mom, like, he's living at home with his mom. And she's like, you know, all of this late night's going to change when school starts, buddy. So, like, he's at least still in high school.
High school, right. Because you got to think at the most 17.
Yeah. That gave it away right there.
Yeah, the Hounds of Hell, and all of a sudden his dog comes and attacks.
Well, let's move on. We've already talked about, we've done a good solid 20 minutes on Lost Boys. I don't know if we're going to be able to do the same with The Thing. So like I said, with the Thing, I'm going to just be like,
man. There's not much symbolism in the Thing. The Thing is just a straight up awesome horror movie. The thing about the Thing that to me sets it apart, especially for the time it came out, are the special effects in that movie. Like, the special effects, like, there's no CGI in that movie. And the special effects hold up with any movie that would come out today.
Absolutely. Again, well, watching it fresh eyes, it's weird whenever you watch a movie with stop motion animation, in your brain it fills in the gaps.
Yeah.
So in your mind you're not seeing it like ta 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 ta. You're just seeing like a tentacle.
Seeing it move, right.
Rewatching the Thing, I was taken at how realistic all the special effects were, even now, compared to CGI.
Yeah. The head that falls off sprouts legs and starts walking.
But it doesn't fall off. It peels itself out. And you watch that neck separate and, like, the whatever it is, tentacle stuff coming off of the body.
Right.
And it's moving as it falls off the table and starts to morph. Like, it's not just like, it's not a hack slash where something falls off. Like, they went into great detail for like a half a second piece of a close-up of this Thing like ripping itself off of the torso and falling off. I mean,
that holds up to any CGI in movies today.
Well, and it's so frightening because I don't know how they filmed it, and whenever I use the word real, it's relative, but that's real. You're really watching that in stop motion, like they moved it frame by frame.
Yeah.
But you're watching it separate from, you're watching something really pull itself out of that right. torso. Even if it's just frame by frame, inch by inch, you're watching it happen. It's not just a computer like anime, like, right. Okay, well, let's algorithm it by 3/4 and see what happens. It's
phenomenal, man.
The jump scares, I've seen that movie again. I don't, not as much as Lost Boys. I've probably seen that movie 10 times. The jump scares are all still there. I was surprised. I was gotten by the autopsy scene again. Like, it gets me every time. Because he's just not, like, you don't expect that in an autopsy.
Right.
He's just like, well, let's look inside and see what happens. And then he comes off with no arms. Like, and not only did the Thing bite him, but it opened up and grew giant teeth.
Yeah.
It
saw blades, basically, to cut through.
It hides until it reveals itself, but when it reveals itself, it is not a nice
right.
monster.
Just like the scene where they're doing the test. You know something's coming. Even the first time you watch it, you know that something's going to come. But they do it so well. Because you think, it's not going to come till the end. It's not going to come till the end. Till they get to the, but no, it comes in the middle.
Yeah.
In the middle of
well,
everything.
Well, the way the blood reacts.
Yeah.
And then the way the dude's just like, and he's just like, okay, well, now I've been exposed, so now it's time to freak out and attempt to survive. One thing that I did see new in this last viewing that I don't know, it's because it's intro titles and you're kind of like, okay, what's going on? I don't really, because of course you don't know what the Thing is, so watching it from fresh eyes, kind of removing yourself from the situation. When the helicopter at the beginning, when the Norwegians are chasing the dog.
Yeah.
And the dog's running across the snow, and this guy's shooting at it. I didn't count the bullets, but I know he shot at it at least 20 times. And he's got a... No, of course, the dog's running, and he's in a moving helicopter, and it's a moving target, and it's a little hard. Except for, a dude shot through a scoped rifle at this Thing at relatively close range, because the dog's running, but he's in a helicopter.
Yeah, it's not like an airplane.
And my thought was, what if he was hitting it, and it just didn't care? Like, bullets were hitting it.
Because all you can kill it with is fire.
But it wasn't like the bullets weren't spattering. It's not like you're gonna get a blip, 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 blip out of it. He's firing, he's hitting it, and it's just taking those bullets and keeps on going because
you can't kill it though.
Because he shot at it enough that he should have hit it at least a couple of times out of that many shots.
Yeah.
Which then, you know, like, you wind all the way back around and be like, that should have given it away at the beginning. Like, if he was hitting it, it makes it all the more.
Right.
You know? That was really the only new thing that I saw. Like, all of the clues are there. I did notice that I found myself watching McCready's bottle of whiskey a lot. Because at the beginning, it's like three quarters full or maybe half. And as someone who drinks, that's not going to get you, like, if you're drinking heavily like he was, that's not going to get you through that. That's going to get you through an evening.
Right.
It's not going to get you through multiple days. But he's constantly got that bottle going. But the thing about whiskey, when it hits you, it warms you up. Like, it might not raise your body temperature, but
it makes you feel warm.
But it makes you feel warm. So as long as he's drinking whiskey, you know he's probably not the guy. And I realize that this is probably, you know, this is the alcoholic view of the thing. But as long as he's got that whiskey bottle and as long as he's drinking on it, he's not the thing.
Right.
So the fan theories are that he filled it with gasoline. So whenever he gives it to Keith David, that if he takes a sip, he can tell whether he's the thing or not because of the gasoline. Well, even if it's just whiskey, because whiskey's flammable too.
Right.
If he can drink the whiskey and he's okay, he's probably not the thing. But it's still up in the air. Mm-hmm. So that was really the only thing that I saw. The dog and the whiskey, not wanting to call it gasoline, but just being like, here, drink this. It'll warm you up. And
right.
Then you'll thing out and I'll have to...
Well, I didn't see anything new, but I just was still able to appreciate what that movie is.
Such a great movie.
It's awesome, dude. Just the situation, Jesse put it on his podcast, the feeling of dread for this. There's no way you could survive. You're doomed, period. There's no way out. There's no way to communicate with anybody. You're stuck.
Blair destroyed the helicopter and the radio and everything.
There's nothing. There's no way you're going to survive. The only thing you can do is try to keep what's killing you from getting to anybody else. That's the goal. Just like Return of the Living Dead. There's no happy ending that's going to happen for anybody there. At all.
Well, in the end, if either one of them is a thing, whether it's what was Keith David's name? It was Childs.
Yeah, Childs.
Whether it's RJ or Childs, they're going to end up freezing and going back into dormancy anyway.
If they are the thing, right.
If either one of them is the thing.
Until the replacement crew shows up and finds them.
If you haven't seen The Thing, watch it.
Don't start with the remake. Go to the original.
See, and so, like, knowing that we had to do Fresh Eyes, and because I misspoke in another episode where I was like, it was kind of a sequel, prequel, or what the 2011 The Thing was it was the Norwegian camp.
Right.
It ends with the helicopter chasing the dog. I haven't seen it, but that's what it is.
Okay.
I think because whenever they went to the Norwegian camp and it was all burnt out, I don't know. I don't remember why I conflated them because it was a remake, but it wasn't a remake because it was a whole bunch of other people. It was like, that's what it was. It's the story before the story. So it's not a sequel.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happened right before the American camp got infiltrated.
Right.
And I'd read some synopsis that was like, it's not a remake. It's a reimagining of what happened in the other camp. And I was like, that doesn't... What? Oh.
Prequel. Definitely worth the watch, though, if you haven't seen it. It's a classic, man.
So in our double feature, The Thing and The Lost Boys, in your opinion, which is a superior film?
The superior film, I would put The Thing.
I agree.
What's
more fun?
The Lost Boys has more elements as far as a
it's more
overall movie. It has comedic side to it. It has, you know, it has romance. It has everything. The Thing is just a dreadful movie. It's very well done. It's highly recommended, but it's a different type of movie. They're both horror movies. They just they're on different sides of the genre.
It's weird. I know John Carpenter, other than Halloween, John Carpenter did a lot of really good work that was not very well respected in its time.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, John Carpenter made Christine. I watched Christine. Christine's not one of those that we're going to do fresh eyes because Christine is not a tremendously popular horror movie. But it was a John Carpenter movie.
I like Christine.
But it wasn't... It didn't do well in the box office, and right. It was kind of... Christine's effective.
Oh, yeah. It's a good movie.
I mean, it's a good, scary movie. It's not The Thing, but it's a John Carpenter movie, so he has this way of doing things with light and sound and... You know, like, half of Halloween is... The effect that goes whoom,
mm-hmm.
You know, like just like whenever you boom, oh crap. It's a jump scare, but it's effective. Christine's kind of the same way. Christine is not nice. The Thing got bad reviews. It didn't do well in the box office. Like it for a Kurt Russell movie as a lead.
Yeah.
But I read those reviews, and all of those reviews, the things that they didn't like, were the things that we love. Like, I think it was Roger Ebert was like, oh, it seems like the entire movie is just set up for a whole bunch of gory jump scares.
I want to watch it.
That's the entire movie, and every single one of those scares is effective.
Mm.
And, it's pretty gross. You know, it's like when the head's ripping off the body, when those dogs are tearing each other apart.
Yeah.
When the tentacles are coming out, like, it's bleak, and it's kind of hard to swallow, but damn, it's good. And it stays on your mind.
Yeah.
You think
you're
about
affected
it.
By those images. So thumbs up for both.
Yeah.
For sure.
Go watch them both. Do this. Watch The Thing. And when you're done watching The Thing, watch The Lost Boys. Because Lost Boys will kind of lighten the mood. It's just scary enough that it's a good horror movie.
It has a happy ending.
But it does have a happy ending. The Thing does not have a good happy
no,
ending.
No, it ends dreadful. Like I said, just like Return of the Living Dead. Nobody wins.
Except maybe The Thing. You
yeah.
just don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's going to put a fork in episode 97, that Fresh Eyes. What do you think about the Fresh Eyes? I like the Fresh
Eyes.
Yeah, it's
fun. We need to pick some more, make a list of movies that we want to do it with.
I mean, you like the rules. Like, I don't care how many times you've seen it, sit down and pretend.
Yeah.
Like you, like watching the dog. Okay, I can't think about the dogs. I got to think, or I can't think about the end. I got to just watch it for what it right. is. If you like The Fresh Eyes, give us a movie to watch. We will watch it. We'll tell you what we think. Hopefully, we've both seen it.
If not, it'll really be Fresh Eyes.
Yeah, if we haven't, it would. We're hoping that The Fresh Eyes is something that we're really, really familiar with, that we have to like kind of do a mental exercise to draw ourselves back out of. But even if it is something if one of us has seen it and the other one hasn't, then that would be a good Fresh Eyes.
Yeah.
But let us know if you like it. Hey, Johnny, I know you're listening to this right now. I'm not going to watch episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. I don't want to watch Star Wars. Give me a good horror movie and I'm on. but hey, shout out to Sirenicide. Those guys are awesome. real good friend of the show. Shout out to Rick Morgan with the Helming Power Hour, Short Bus, Under My Wheels, House of Wax. I know you're on another hiatus, but hopefully that you can find the power to rise again like the zombies you love so much. Who else do we need to shout out to?
God, I wasn't thinking of anything. Shout out to Jesse Deadman. Deadman's Tome, our good friend.
Shout out to the Deadman's Tome. Keep doing what you do. We'll see you at the Halloween show.
Tom Martino over at the THC Horror Podcast, part of the Horrorphilia Network.
And everybody else, we're going to go ahead and sign off. And until next time, keep it scary.
Later.
Drag the river.